session number 24902, Reel 3.
Tell me about your arrival on board the Belfast.
Well, before I arrived on there, I was in the barracks, and every morning you had to go down and look on the draft board. There used to be a big board up on the wall, and anybody that was on draft, every morning you went down to see if you'd got a draft check. And there'd be all the names of the ships up there, and you had to look down to see if your name was on there. But the Belfast had just come back from Korea, and there was hundreds of names down there. And because I walked down and looked up, and I thought, oh yes, I'm on that. And then you had to report there, and they'd say, you know, you've been drafted, you muster at number 10, number 10 drill at a door, number 10 door of the drill shed with your baggage, that was it, at a certain time. And because you went down there, and there was loads and loads of it all standing there, you had to put all your gear in the lorry, which was your kit bag and your hammock, and then you had to wait, and you all had to, we all marched. They sent all the baggage off, and we all had to march from the barracks right round the dockyard to the ship. And when we got there, the commander came and called us all to attention and gave us a little talk, and then we all had to march on the ship, go to the regulating office and find out what mess you was in, and they give you a station card to tell you what your action station was, your cruising station and all that. And then you all had to muster on the quarter deck, and then the skipper give a chat, you know, to welcome you all aboard.
So it was a wholly new crew, was it? Completely new.
Yeah. Well, some of them did stay on, because Ted, he stayed on, he came home on her, and then he went back out again. But there was some that did, you know, go back again.
So what were your first impressions of the Belfast?
Another big ship. Another big ship, but she looked all right.
Well, you've had a little chat, or talking to you from the commander and the captain.
Mm.
What was your impression about the atmosphere on board?
Great. Right, yeah, we all knew where we was going. We knew it was, you know, it was war, and we'd all have to work up before you went out. They didn't just ship you out there. You all had to work up and learn how to work together, you know, doing everything. And they used to do all different exercises, you know, to get you on the ball.
How did you feel about going into a war situation?
Didn't mind at all, because I'd been brought up in the war, hadn't I? You know, it wasn't as if I hadn't experienced warfare or gunfire, you know, and bombing and things like that, and damage. You know, some of them, I suppose they'd all might have done, but some of them, especially coming from the London area, you know, and perhaps some of them hadn't experienced that sort of thing, but I had, so I wasn't as bad as what they was, I'm sure of it.
Can you give me a rough idea of when it was you joined the Belfast? It was in 1950.
Yes.
Do you remember what month?
November. Yeah.
Tell me about your trip out to Korea on the Belfast.
Very nice. I hadn't been abroad then, you know, but it was great. We started off. We went out to Gibraltar, called in Gibraltar, and then we went to Malta. Then we went through the Suez Canal, stopped at Aden to get some oil from fuel. Then we went on to Singapore, then to Hong Kong, and then Japan. We went to Sasebo, which was our more main base there, out there in Sasebo. And then from there, we started doing patrols, you know, on the east and west coast of Korea.
Tell me about the sort of training or sort of exercises you did on the way out there to prepare you for your arrival in Korea.
Well, there wasn't really a lot to do, because, you know, you couldn't do any firing or anything, you know, and the main thing was to get out there. And then once we got there, is when, you know, it started. didn't do much more. Might do a bit of exercise, like I think in Singapore. We was coming out of Singapore, and they was going to motor torpedo boats and motor gun boats and submarines was going to try and attack us, an Australian submarine, you know. So we had to try and sneak out and get by them before they caught us, you know, and things like that.
But already you said a little bit about day-to-day life on the Belfast, about the mess arrangements, mm-hmm. all that sort of thing. Could you tell me a little bit about your working arrangements, about the watches and what your duties were during your time on the Belfast?
All right. When I joined the Belfast, you get put into different working parties, and mine was in the side party. I was with five other blokes, and our main job was to keep all the over the side clean. Anything over the side, we had to do it. So we had to get used to using the stages and working with a bosun's chair and doing anything like that over the ship side. And we also had a small little pontoon so that could be lowered into the water by the crane. And then we could slide down and get on it and then paddle round and paint anything round the ship's side, that, because when you're going along, nobody's allowed over the side. And if we got in harbour and, there was a little bit, we'd had a knock or something, then we could get on there and go along the ship's side and paint it. And when we was in Hong Kong, there used to be some old Chinese lady, and she had about six girls that worked with her. She was in charge. They had these little pontoons so they could go around and do little jobs. And they used to get all the gas that came out of the galley, you know, that they didn't use. She used to get all that and take that. That was her bunce. She was all right. She got the BEM. They awarded her the BEM. Yeah, she was a nice old lady. And if you wanted any rabbits, well, we call them rabbits, that's like presents, if you wanted to buy a nutcase. And because I used to go and see her and say, well, can you get me a case of shore, you know. She'd go ashore and get it for about a third of the price that I'd have to pay for it, and things like that.
What's a bunce?
Bunce? Well, a bunce is, like, instead of them throwing all the gash over the side, you know, the potatoes and those left over or any meat or anything, instead of putting it down a gas chute, you know, they used to give it to her, and I suppose she used to take it ashore and make stew out of it, and soup, and sell it. Well, they used to, they come in the sampan, and in your gas chute, like when you've finished, done all the washing up, you'd put it all in the bucket, and there'd be bits of bread and potato and a piece of cabbage and that in there with all the washing up water. They used to tip it down the chute so that it went over the side. And they used to be under the bottom with like a fishing net to catch that. And I've actually seen them, you know, take a piece of stale bread out that had been in the water and take it out and just give it to the baby and things like that, because we've got nothing to eat.
Getting back to your duties. You were a seaman.
Yes.
But you were also a gunner.
Yes.
Were you in the gunnery department?
No. We did have a gunnery department on there, you know, that used to look after, there's different branches, you know. Some of them looked after the mechanism of the guns, you know, and stripped them down if anything went wrong with them, you know. But we was just on there if they had to be fired.
So you weren't actually in the gunnery department?
No.
Which department?
Quarter armourers, I think they used to call them, that used to look after the guns, you know, maintain them. But we just used to fire them.
And what department were you in?
Well, side party. I was just like a seaman, but I was a seaman gunner. And the other department I was in, I worked at all day, was a side party. But because if there was any action or they was doing any shoots at sleeves, then because I had to close up action stations with the rest of them.
And tell me about your action station.
Action station was on a four-barrel pom-pom. That was my action station. My defence station was on the four-barrel pom-pom aft, and my cruising station was up in the main director on the front of the ship, which controlled all the guns.
Can you explain the difference between those different states of readiness, the action station, the cruising?
Right, now, action station is if you was in a very dangerous area. If we was going inshore to bombard somewhere, then you would close up action stations. Everybody's at action stations. But then if you was, you can lay off land, don't go in so far, well, you're out of range of any shore batteries, and then you can go to cruising stations, which is where you don't all close up. You only have half of your men closed up. And then if you was right further out, then you could go to cruising stations, which is you no chance of getting.
I think you mentioned cruising stations.
And that's about a third.
You mentioned cruising stations. Mm. What was the other one?
It was action stations, cruising stations.
Which is half.
Oh, no. Action stations, defence stations, and then cruising. Yeah.
Defence stations, how many?
Yeah. That was half the ships closed up.
And cruising stations?
It was just about a third, you know. When they're miles away, you know, on the off chance. But I mean, if anything, the only thing you used to worry about there is aircraft. Because you've got your radar, and if they picked up any aircraft, then they'd sound action stations.
Tell me about the organisation of your department. Who else
right.
was in there?
There was a petty officer in charge, petty officer Elwood. And he was a smashing old boy. He'd been through, you know, the Second World War. He's a good old lad. And then the rest of us was able seamen. And we had to know how to get the stages over the side or up the mast or anything like that. And a couple of times I had to paint the anchor cable. And once when we was in dry dock in Singapore, there used to be from the bullnose right in the front of the ship, and right down, right underneath the bow at the bottom, there used to be like a big ring, and there was chains went all the way down, and where they used to add the paravanes to, because we used to sweep for mines, for minefields and that. And I had to paint those, I had to get over in the bosun's chair and lower myself right over. And when I looked down, because I was right up high anyway, and then there was in the dry dock, you look down and you're relying on a piece of rope. That was a little bit scary. And because as you went down, where the bow comes in like that, you had to have one sailor each side pulling you so to get you into it, you know, because you'd be down there and you're supposed to be painting there, and they had to pull you in there like that. So you had the bow of the ship up there like that, and you was painting down like this. And then when they let you go, because you swung right out, didn't you, out over the dry dock. It's a little bit scary, that. You think, my God, is he going to snap?
You told us there was a chief petty officer above you. Which officers were in charge of your department?
He was a petty officer. And if anything, like, I think it was the commander used to come and tell him what he wanted doing, and then, of course, then he had to do it.
And the commander was in which department?
Well, he was the second in command to the captain. You got the captain, and then you got the commander.
But you know, you have different branches or departments on a ship, you know, like the engineering, gunnery,
yeah,
and so forth. Do you know which department that officer?
He was seaman. He was in the seaman branch. Like the captain was a seaman, you know, and then you did have captain electrical and all them different branches. But the captain of the ship, he was in charge. And if anything happened to him, the commander took charge. And then below him, there was a lieutenant commander. And that's how he went down, lieutenant, you know, like that.
Tell me about the watch keeping system on board the Belfast and the different watches that applied at different times.
Yeah. But your watches, as you, when you joined, you was put in a watch, port or starboard watch, and they was broken down into two. First the port, second the port, first the starboard, second the starboard. And then you kept in those watches all the time. But your normal watches on the ship was normally from 12 four-hour watches, but you had the dog watch, which was only 2 hours. The dog watch was 4 to 6 and 6 to 8, so you only done 2 hours, so you didn't get that same watch all the time. You rotated, and they was called the dog watches.
And did that system apply all the time?
Yes.
Did it change when you were in harbour?
Oh, it changed when you was in harbour, yeah. Yes, they changed in harbour, but all the time you was at sea, you kept those watches, sea watches, that's what they used to call those.
And what happened when you were in harbour?
You just normally went, used to more or less like work, day work. And when you was in harbour, you had a duty watch. And then, you know, you was, all the rest of the watch, you could go ashore, like the starboard watch go ashore, but the port watch stay on board, you know, so if anything happens. And then the next day, it changed round, you know.
How did you cope with the climate?
Got very difficult at times, because, I mean, one minute we was off Korea, and we was freezing cold, you know, terrific bad cold weather. And then 2 weeks later, we'd be down in Singapore, you know, sweltering hot. And it did get a little bit difficult, I suppose.
Tell me about the cold weather.
Cold weather? God, dear. It's not very far away. It's Siberia. People don't realise that, you know, and we really had cold weather, as cold as it was up the Arctic, and we had to go and break all the ice off the guns and the rails on the top of the ship. Otherwise, you know, that's what he's doing in the Arctic. Otherwise, the ship was liable to turn turtle if it got built up too much ice on there.
And how did you get rid of the ice?
Just used to go and bash it, knock it off.
And what did that mean for your living arrangements and your comfort?
They used to give us warm clothing, and they used to give us long johns, the old long johns, all wool, and it was so cold that we used to wear one pair, and the other pair we used to put our arms down the legs and then button it round so we could make something else. But then we used to have put our overcoats on and oil skins, anything to keep you warm, because especially on the guns you was right up out in all the weather, you know, and it was freezing cold. Used to have sealskin hats, and they even give us leather boots, because, you know, and you could never take your gloves off. You used to have big gloves. If you took them off and put it on metal, your hand used to stick there. If you've ever got anything out of the freezer and picked up and found out your fingers stick there, you tear your skin off.
And what about the heat?
Heat was terrible, and especially when we was de-ammunitioning ship in Singapore, and they had great big vats of lime juice and salt tablets, so you could have to keep it going because the sweat was just pouring out, especially down in the magazine. I was down in a 6-inch magazine, and we had only been down here about 5 or 10 minutes, and our working gear was soaking wet, so we got some spun yarn, and you know the little sweatbands you see the Japanese wear around the head? We got one of those, and we just put it under our crutch and just had that and a piece of string around our waist, because the sweat was, and we was paddling in sweat when we finished, because you had to get every shell off the ship, and there wasn't air down there, no air, and it's just like working in an oven.
So how long did it take you to travel between the two extremes of temperature?
Well, I can't really tell, not unless I looked in the, you know, looked up in me book.
about the sort of activities that the Belfast was engaged in during the Korean War? What was its duties?
More or less, it was doing bombardment. If the troops ashore would be, you know, were meeting a bit of resistance, or they was getting attacked, then they could contact us and ask us for support, and we could, we could either fire the 4-inch if it was nearer, or the 6-inch, because you can fire about 14 miles inland. And because then we used to fire a ranging shot, and then they'd tell us, you know, that we was like 200 yards over, and then because we'd drop down the range a little bit and fire again, especially if it was, you know, big troops attacking them. And then once we dropped one in, and then we could fire all the lot then, and really spatter the place, you know. And there's one of my mates, he went to France last year to the war graves over there, and the one where they've got the, they played a bugle every night, and he was standing there watching it, and he see the, a bloke standing over, and he see he had the career medals on, and afterwards he went over and he said to him, you know, I see you was in Korea, and he said, yes, he said, he said, I was there as well. He said, oh, what regiment was you in? And he said, I wasn't in a regiment. He said, I was in the Royal Navy. And he said, what ship was you on? And he said, I was on HMS Belfast. And he said, my God, he said, you saved our bacon sometimes, lads. He said, yeah, he said, the old Belfast. So it shows that they appreciated, you know, the support that we did give them.
How long would your patrols up and down the east coast of Korea last?
Could last weeks, because we used to go right up to the Yellow River, right up, and it's more or less near up to China. And when we was up there, we was anchored, and they used to send mines down with the wire across them. They were 45-gallon drones with a detonator in them, and apparently they used to send them down the river. And they're supposed to wrap round your bow, and as they come round, you know, make contact, you know, they used to go off. But we used to have Marines up there, you know, with Bren guns, and if you see anything coming, and mines, you know, and they used to fire and sink them. Sometimes they used to go off if you hit them properly.
How did they land the mines?
Pardon?
How were they laying the mines?
We laying them up the river, because the Yellow River comes down, and because we was anchored in the mouth, like.
And during the time that you were on these patrols, were you at action stations all the time?
Well, as I say, not action stations all the time. Once you got inland, yes, we had to go to action stations. When we was doing the bombarding, we had to go to action stations.
Can you remember any particular incidents when you were bombarding the coast?
Well, we was... I can remember when... we'd bombarded an island because the we did land a lot of Korean Marines under some Americans, and they put me to landing barges and took them ashore, and they were supposed to be exercising, and they took these South Koreans ashore, laid all the mines, and then marched them back over their own mines, and then they brought 10 casualties back and bodies. And as we was leaving there, we see a lot of people waving in a cave. And the captain sent one of the motorboats in, or two of the motorboats in, to see if they could help them, because they was waving the white flag. And then when they got to the shore, they dropped down, and then the machine guns opened up on the boats. Then we got a couple of the Marines got wounded. But we did lose two Marines. They was on a patrol, Sergeant Hamill and Corporal Hamill and Sergeant James, and they was patrolling between the islands because they, when the time they used to come across the islands, the North Koreans, and invade it, and they was on these patrols, and they just disappeared. We never found out what happened to them. Yeah. Then we got hit by a shore battery as well. I got one killed and three injured.
Was that the only time the Belfast was
hit? Yes. That was the only time we got a hit.
You were telling me earlier that you went out on patrol with the Royal Marines.
Yeah, in Malaya, yes.
Was that sometime after that?
That was in when we went into dry dock. We went in to get, I told you, we went in to get new barrels, and they put on, wanted volunteers to go up to give them a hand, you know.
But that was after your time on the Belfast?
No, that's while I was on the Belfast.
When was that then?
So 1952, I think, 1952.
Whilst you were in Korea, if we deal with that first of all, did you have cause to fire at any aircraft?
No. The only time we, more or less, we used to have them, you know, aircraft flying about, but I can remember one occasion when we was in the cinema. And it came over to Tanoi action stations, you know, 20 enemy aircraft approaching the ship, and we all went to action stations, but they didn't come up to the ship. Don't know whether they turned away or what, but that was what the pipe was. Picked up 20 enemy aircraft on the radar, but didn't see any. We see a lot of few of them crash, American aircraft, flying fortresses. I didn't realise that until afterwards. We see two flying fortresses flying round, and then they went between these two islands, and then they came round again, and they both crashed into the mountain, where they all bailed out, and then it crashed. But afterwards I found out that was the island we was anchored off was an emergency landing strip, because I went ashore and took a photograph of one of our aircraft that was on the beach that made a false landing. And years afterward, after I'd left the Navy, I wrote and asked someone that was, because it was off the ocean, and I see the, there was a reunion of the Oceans Association. I wrote and asked them if they knew anything about it. And apparently this chap, he used to work on the aircraft, ammunitioning it, and he knew the pilot, he said, but it wasn't the pilot whose name was on the aircraft that was flying that day, it was another one. And he contacted him, and he was in Canada.
Can you remember anything else about those patrols along the Korean coast?
We used to, often we used to get, send the boarding parties away to go over the junk to see if they was taking any, you know, arms or anything like that, ammunition, up to the communists. And sometimes we used to get them and we'd put a steel cable on and tow them behind till they all broke up.
With the crew on board?
No, we used to take the crew off.
And who formed the boarding parties?
No, well, Marines and sailors, you know, like gunnery ratings, you know, that's what it was for.
Anything else that you can remember about that time?
Well, we did pick up, we were sailing along, going back to Korea, and we see this little rowing boat, miles out to sea, miles from anywhere, and these two Koreans in it. And of course, we sent the boat away and picked them up and brought them on. And apparently they said they was on one of these little islands, and they'd gone ashore onto the mainland to do a little bit of sabotage or, you know, a bit of spying. And they was coming back, and they got machine gunned as they was coming back. Apparently, they said the North Koreans had come across and invaded the island, you know, while they was away, and we picked them up, and then we went back to where they came from, and started bombarding the island, and drove the North Koreans off the island, and we sent the boats round the other side, and we was picking up the North Koreans that had chucked all their clothes off, because they was swimming to get back. And one of them, he didn't have any clothes on, they wrapped the white ensign round him.
And what happened to those North Koreans?
They were all taken prisoner and then used to land them at Incheon. And there was one thing there. There was one of the actions, that action, that there was two of the prisoners come on that were wounded. They'd both lost a foot on the landmines. And they was in the sick bay, put them both in the sick bay. And when they found out, you know, that they was enemies, they started throwing the water bottles and everything at each other. So we had to separate them. We kept one in the sick bay and put the other one in the torpedo parting shop. And then when they went to leave the ship, the Navy supplied them with a boiler suit and trainers. Well, they both took the same size trainer, so they give one the left foot and the other one the right foot. And of course, no, although they didn't have a foot each, you know, they both wanted a full pair. So they had to give them a full, you know, give them two... Like a pair of slippers or gym shoes or whatever it was, you know, but they only had one foot.